Hello, and welcome to this podcast from Consider This. Please let me know what you think and tell others about us on social media. This podcast was originally broadcast live on Northumberland 89.7 FM. You can hear this show live every Friday at noon. Thank you for downloading this program, and I hope you enjoy it.
Hello and welcome back. This is Consider This Northumberland, and I'm your host, Robert Washburn, and you're listening to Northumberland 89.7 FM. Last week, there were interviews with the county officials about what was happening at 600 William Street. Earlier, you heard from a person who was living in the encampment. But what is it like from the perspective of an individual trying to give support to those who are living rough? Missy McLean is a social worker for the Northumberland Legal Center specializing in tenant issues. She is also a community organizer working on harm reduction for people struggling with addictions. She has worked directly with Virginia Bailey and other people at the encampment from the very start. Her efforts will provide yet another view of what has unfolded and what needs to be done. I'm pleased to have on Consider This Northumberland, Missy McLean, a social worker for the Northumberland Community Legal Center and a community organizer. Welcome back, Missy McLean.
Hi, Rob. Thanks for having me back.
Have you been involved with any of the people who are living in the encampment in Coburg?
Yes.
For how long?
A lot of the folks who are living at the encampment, I've been connected with in community, some of them for years, in different ways. The connections and support that I'm involved with right now in terms of their sheltering and establishment of this encampment, I would say really kicked off July 28th. I would say July 28th is sort of, I would put that as sort of the origin of a lot of what's happened in the last few weeks.
Tell me about July 28th and why that date is significant.
Yeah. So July 28th is the date when a number of service providers and, fire, public health, town officials did a second inspection. They did a first inspection on July 27th and then did a second inspection of 413 Division Street, which is an address that's been in the news because of this inspection and subsequent determination by the health unit that this was, there was an accumulation of raw sewage in the basement, they said, that was likely to have an adverse effect on the health of those living within the premises. And so they condemned the building and displaced the people who were living there.
In what capacity were you involved in that then?
Sure. I was first called in my capacity as a community organizer and in relation to the relationships I have with the folks who live at 413 Division or who were living at 413 Division. But then I also put on my social worker hat in connection with my work at the Legal Center, because one of the things that the Legal Center does is tenants' rights. The lawyers and the community legal workers who are staffed there support tenants. And so I recognized immediately that this was a tenant's issue and that they would need legal advice and support. And so I called my colleague from the Legal Center to come down to observe what was happening and to offer legal advice and information to the tenants as they were being displaced.
So when you got the call and you came, explain what unfolded from your perspective.
Sure. So what I was observing was a coordinated plan being executed by a number of entities from the town. So that was fire, the fire inspector was there, the fire chief was there, police were there, the health unit was there, members of bylaw, I believe, were there as well for the town. And this was a coordinated plan to deem this premises uninhabitable There was a school bus waiting in the parking lot across the street to take tenants to a hotel that had been arranged for 72 hours of accommodations for folks through the Red Cross emergency assistance program. And people were being given 1 hour to collect their belongings and to get on the bus if they chose to be taken out of Coburg to a hotel for 72 hours accommodation.
How did they get from the hotel then to living on the West Beach? Do you know how that unfolded?
Yeah. I helped bring people in my own vehicle back to Coburg, the tenants who were living there. Some other communities helped with coordinating to help people come back to Coburg. And then there was discussion by the tenants and the other. So, and I have to say, so when we talk about tenants at 413 Division, there were the tenants who were on, you know, paper. And then there were a whole bunch of other folks who depended on the people who lived there to allow them to stay there and to shelter as well. So while it might have been on paper that there were four, you know, or five tenants, the reality was that there were upwards of 20 people in this community, I would say, who depended on that place to shelter on a nightly basis. And so the tenants, you know, formal and informal of that address, once it was determined that, like, okay, nobody's coming to save us, no one's coming to provide us with a new shelter now that they've told us we can't live in our home, and they decided that, yeah, they had to find another way to shelter, and that was going to be intense. And so they decided to form an encampment together to provide safety and community, because there's safety in numbers. And that's how that the encampment at the West Beach came about, is my understanding.
Now, the Northumberland Community Legal Center, I know, offers advice and advocates on behalf of tenants. What, if anything, did you or the legal center do to advocate for these people to have shelter?
So, I mean, I'll talk about the social work side of what I was a part of, and the advocacy there. So advocating for, you know, motel rooms or hotel rooms to be provided for the folks who had been living at 413 Division and had been displaced. I tried to advocate for that. The only sheltering option that was provided was for folks to go to Transition House. There wasn't, you know, enough space for everybody who had been sheltering at 413 Division to go to Transition House, but that was the option that was given to people. And so I tried to advocate for alternative options, recognizing that Transition House is not an appropriate or accessible option for everybody. And then one of the members of the legal team at the legal center was doing a lot of work around, you know, trying to communicate with the town about, you know, the rights of tenants and the rights of folks to shelter, you know, their charter rights.
So before we get down too far down that path, I'd like to just go back for a second. And when you were advocating, who were you advocating to? And what were some of the, you mentioned you were trying to advocate for different alternatives. What were some of those alternatives that you were advocating for? So to whom and what were the options that you were trying to get?
Well, the immediate one was trying to advocate for hotel rooms. And that advocacy was done first to management at Transition House, because they are the central intake point for housing and homelessness supports for folks. And they run the shelter overflow program that sees some folks sheltered in hotel or some motel rooms in the community when there isn't enough room at the house. And then also just trying to figure out, like, when would this home be made available again to the tenants who were paying rent and had been displaced from there.
So now there's this encampment down on the West Beach. When you are talking to the various people in the encampment, what do they tell you that they are looking for and from whom?
I mean, ultimately, folks are looking for permanent housing, appropriate housing. But we know that doesn't exist right now in our community. That's what they're looking for. They're looking for housing, permanent housing. They're also looking, I think, just in, you know, in my conversations and my observations, they're looking to be recognized and treated as valuable members of this community, members who have rights, members who are deserving of dignity and respect and support, rather than as a nuisance or undesirable or folks that, you know, aren't welcome or don't belong here.
How often did you have contact with them during their time on the West Beach?
Pretty much on a daily basis.
And when you were down there, not just talking to the people in the encampment, what was your sense of the public's reaction to this as people were, say, going by or being around them? What was your sense of that?
It really varied. It was interesting to see the different reactions that people had. You know, some folks expressed, you know, sentiments of solidarity and an understanding that, you know, this is sort of where we have ended up as a community based on a whole whack of factors. And so some folks understood that. And then there were folks who expressed contempt, anger, disdain. Yeah, it really varied.
I know there's a lot of laws around privacy, but can you share any of the background of these people who are living in the encampment? Do you know how long some of them have been without permanent shelter? I guess the next thing I'd like to talk about is the move from the West Beach to 600 William Street. Now, in an interview with Victoria Bailey, one of the people living in the encampment, she described the move as being deliberate. She and the others wanted to be on municipally owned property. Now, I understand the group does have a lawyer, and we've spoken a little bit about that as well. Can you help listeners appreciate why it is it significant that the group is taking these deliberate steps and working with a lawyer to be located where they are now?
Sure. So there were a couple of things happened in the lead up to the move, the dismantling of the encampment at the West Beach and the move up to 600 William. That weekend before this happened, there was a big storm that came through town and it did a real number on the encampment. People's campsites were decimated. And so what happened over that weekend were about 18 members of that community at the encampment at the West Beach were helped to get humanitarian aid and move to hotels through the Red Cross program. Community member Rob Horgan was one of the main coordinators of that effort. He recognized the destruction that had happened at this West Beach encampment and said, these folks need help. They need humanitarian aid and help and work to coordinate to have residents provided temporary shelter at a hotel. It ended up being in Peterborough because the hotel in Port Hope that was initially booked denied the encampment residents rooms. They turned them away when they showed up to check in. So people went up to Peterborough. So there was a community coordinated effort to assist with transportation. People got up there. They were able to access healthcare and different things while they were in Peterborough. And then a coordination of efforts on the part of community to bring people back to Cobourg after the 72 hours was there. And during that weekend, there were a lot of conversations about, okay, is this site at the West Beach the best site from like a, you know, exposure to the elements, safety, privacy, and also the legal component of like, where can folks shelter right now? And also, invoke, you know, what was determined through the Waterloo decision. And so after a lot of discussion and evaluation of different possibilities, the encampment community members and residents determined that 600 William was where they wanted to go next. And so that move happened. And yeah, when Virginia said that it was strategic and coordinated, it absolutely was. Yeah.
County officials have said in a press release last month that they are working with mental health workers from the Northumberland Hills Hospital and the Coburg Police HARP unit. Are you aware of this, and how are they working? What are you witnessing in terms of supports for these people?
So I know that there have been meetings called bringing together a bunch of the different services and supports in the community to talk about how to best serve and support the residents of the encampment. And I am seeing those workers and members of those different organizations on site at the encampment, you know, being there to check in with folks about what are their immediate needs. I'm not sure what else is being offered in this moment, but that is something I'm seeing that didn't happen when people were displaced from 413 Division. No one came to see folks at the hotel when they were displaced. And so it is great to see the service providers and the different outreach teams and workers now on site at the encampment at 600 William.
Virginia Bailey said in a recent interview that something has to be done soon. With the cold weather coming, she predicted someone is going to die. What is your assessment?
My assessment is that Virginia knows a lot more than us so-called professionals about what the realities are on the ground for folks who are marginalized and who are sleeping rough and who are struggling. And if her assessment is that there is an imminent risk of losing another member of our community because of their exposure to the elements, the inadequacy of healthcare and housing and supports for folks who are marginalized, then I believe her and I agree with her.
What needs to be done to address the needs of those in the encampment that can be done immediately? Do you see any quick fixes or low-hanging fruit that can be taken advantage of?
Yeah, I think that the lowest hanging fruit is engaging with the residents in a meaningful way and inviting them to the table. I love the idea of a coordination of efforts on the part of service providers, but they didn't invite the people who actually live in the encampment to the table. Right? There is an adage amongst people, mostly amongst people who use drugs, but also people, you know, from the disabilities movement, right? Disability justice movement says nothing about us without us. If you want to help people and you want to work with people and support people, don't talk about them without them in the room. They are the experts in their own experience. So one of the lowest hanging fruits would be to actually invite the residents of the encampment to participate in those meetings. Don't have separate meetings without them. Have them in the room. As well, there wasn't an invitation extended to the community members, right? The non-professionals. But they're the ones who have been most connected and in relationship and listening to and supporting and working with the residents of the encampment. Where was their invitation to the table? I'm slowly starting to see conversations starting to happen, but that should have happened from the beginning. And it needs to be happening now in a much more intentional way. That would, I think, expedite things, because why have this like middle, it's not even a middleman at this gap in communication where it's like broken telephone. It's like, what do the residents tell, you know, the work, and then they go back and they talk about them. No, bring them all into the room. listen to the residents. They'll tell you what they need. They'll tell you what works, what doesn't work, what feels safe, what doesn't feel safe. Give people choices, involve them in the process. That's what I would love to see happen right away.
I want to shift gears here. What, if any, are some of the positives or takeaways related to this encampment from the past few weeks for you?
I think the strength of community and the connection that exists between members of the community. You know, you spoke to Virginia and Chris, I think, right? Two members of the encampment community. I think a lot about the care that they provide for folks who are also living at the encampment. I think about a lot about like the coordination of like meals for everybody, sharing of resources, sharing of survival gear, and that really beautiful sense of community and collaboration to keep each other safe. The folks who are living in the encampment, they know it's been made pretty clear to them. Again, like I said earlier, no one's coming to save them. They have to save themselves in this moment. They have to figure out how they're going to survive in this moment. And they're doing that together. And that's my biggest takeaway, is the strength that takes. You know, when you are living in the elements, when you are living in poverty, when you are the target of physical violence, structural violence, all of these things, and you can still find ways to take care of each other, that is a strength that I reflect on a lot. There's a great group in the community called the Community Connectors, and they're a group of residents who have just come together, and they are supporting and working alongside residents of the encampment and other marginalized community members in all kinds of ways. And so people feel compelled to get involved in that kind of way, to actually like take action. Then reaching out to that group could be a good step too.
Missy McLean, I want to thank you so much for talking to me today.
Thanks for having me, Rob.
That was Missy McLean, a social worker for the Northumberland Community Legal Center and a community organizer. As of deadline, the status of Virginia Bailey and the others is unconfirmed. Attempts were made to reach both Virginia and Missy McLean. Please check the website for this program to get updates. I want to thank my guests this week for talking to me, and I want to thank all the listeners for tuning in today. Please join me again next week when we will talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life and Northumberland County. So please tune in. If you would like to listen or share this or any podcast, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. There you will find past podcasts, news, and other information about life and politics in Northumberland County. Or you can go to the radio station's website at northumberland897.ca. I'm Robert Washburn. Thanks for taking time out of your day to listen in, and I hope over the week you will continue to consider this. Thank you for listening to this podcast from Consider This. If you have any comments or would like to suggest a story, please contact me at considerthisnorthumberland@gmail.com, or you can message me on Facebook at Consider This. If you enjoyed this podcast or are looking for more news and information about Northumberland County, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. That's consider-this.ca. And don't forget to share. And again, thank you for listening, and stay tuned for more from Consider This.